My cutter, Peter, cut out all the pattern pieces from that, and then we had a stitcher go in and stitch every single stripe.
Jeez.
Yeah.
That's a lot of work.
My producer called me and was like, is this really necessary? I'm hearing it took 55 hours. And I was like, yes.
Hello and welcome to the Art of Costume Blogcast. I am your host, Spencer Williams. Hey, costume nerds. Thank you so much for joining me. So excited to talk about today's special film. Of course, it is Scream 6. And you know how much I love the Scream movies. I've been watching them forever. They're probably my favorite horror movies. They're just perfect. I'm a Gale Weathers fanboy for life. That lime green suit in the 90s changed my life for the better. And maybe I didn't know it back then, but it definitely changed my life. Let's start off with a summary. Four survivors of the Ghostface murders leave Woodsboro behind for a fresh start in New York City. However, they soon find themselves in the fight for their lives when a new killer embarks on a bloody rampage. And that is Scream 6. As always, let's dive behind the wardrobe. We have directors Tyler Gillett and Matt Bettinelli. And then I would love to introduce my friend, costume designer, Avery Pluis. You would know her for her work on Ready or Not, The Craft Legacy, and 8-Bit Christmas. So now I have some good news and I have some bad news. The good news is Avery is going to be joining me right after the break to talk all about Scream 6. And I love this movie. There's so much to get into. First, I love any movie that takes place during Halloween. Just so many fun costumes. And then, of course, I love diving behind the history of Ghostface, the mask, all the archival costumes that we're going to get into. That's right. Avery had to recreate all of the costumes you see in this film. And then, of course, we have to talk about Gale Weathers. So we're going to get into that. Bad news. Daniel's gonna murder me. Sorry, Daniel. The bad news is this interview was pre-recorded just not too long ago, a few hours ago, and we had some technology issues. It's not Avery's fault, it was my fault because I'm dumb and I had some of the wrong buttons pressed. So I am currently on Daniel's hit list. Sorry, Daniel. So you will hear a little bit of echo in the interview coming from my side. All I ask is that you forgive me. I guess, it happens. I'm sorry, okay? But it's Scream 6, so you're going to fall in love with Avery's explanation of the costumes, the process. You won't even realize that your host of now almost, 2 years now, still can't figure out how to use technology sometimes. I'm sorry. With that being said, let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we will be joined by costume designer Avery Pluis.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details. ¶¶
excited to introduce my friend, Avery Pluis. Hey, Avery.
Hi, how are you?
Good. I'm so excited to talk to you. I've been wanting to talk about this film since I saw it. It's amazing. I didn't think I could love a Scream movie more, so I've just been dying to talk to you.
Yeah, no, I'm excited to like actually talk to you finally.
Let's start with this. What is your favorite scary movie?
The Shining, I think.
The Shining.
Yeah. It's funny. I didn't like horror until I started working in film. I get startled really easily. Like doing Scream in Montreal, I made the mistake of telling my crew that very early on. And the amount of jump scares I personally did with my crew dressed up in ghosts, because we had like millions of them because of the subway sequence.
Right.
So people would just jump out of nowhere at me in a full ghost face costume all the time. But I literally jump. Yeah, I will jump like 4 feet in the air. So I remember seeing the Scream previews as a kid and just like running upstairs to my room because I was so. I think it's like kind of ironic that I've designed one now. Even in my house, like my husband will walk around a corner and I'll be like, "Oh my god!" And he's like, "I live here." But yeah.
Well, let's dive into Scream. So obviously, Scream is such a huge, well-loved franchise. Take me back to the moment where you realized you were going to be designing the costumes for this next installment. Imagine it must have been very exciting, but also very scary, as we just talked about.
Yeah, I was actually in Los Angeles. My husband was working down there and I was taking time off after a long project I had done, and Radio Silence called me. I did Ready or Not with them, and they were like, "We're going to Montreal. Like, would you consider doing Scream?" And I was like, "Yeah, like 100. Like, I just love those guys so much. I would do anything for them." And so I was like, "Yeah, for sure." And I think it actually wasn't when I got to Montreal and I realized like it's a huge franchise movie, it like definitely hit me. But I think it actually wasn't until the Ghostface fitting that I was like, "Holy shit, this is. This is a big deal." And just like seeing the costume and the all of it come together, that was like probably the moment. And also when they told me they wanted to do the new mask, that was also like, okay, here we are.
Yeah, well, let's just dive right into it then, I guess.
Yeah. Right?
So this film had a lot of qualities to it that were unique compared to the others. It took place in New York City. You know, one of the few times we see them outside of Woodsboro. It takes place during Halloween. It's during the fall. So there's a lot for you have to think about. And also there's a little bit of a legacy to it. So how did you prepare for this project?
First I watched, because of the museum sequence, I watched all of the films and went through everything with a very fine-tooth comb of just like also looking at the consistencies throughout all of the films, the sort of stylistic elements. And I also really looked at the New York history, particularly for Mindy's character. I think I watching all the movies, and that's where I started, because I felt like I had to, like, I've seen them all before, but I felt like I needed to really study them and watch them multiple times. And I think also there's not a lot of images of certain things online. I have to say the fan base is incredible in terms of like my ability to research things, like the details that they all know about certain costumes. But I would like Stu's robe that we recreated in the museum scene was just like screenshot by screenshot. I have pictures of my assistant sitting, because I don't know which one, but there's a couple that you can't get screenshots of online. And so she literally would sit with like a giant black piece of fabric over her head, over a computer screen, and take pictures with her cell phone. So yeah, we started with, you know, the franchise and kind of went from there.
Right. Just to understand the base of it. And, you know, I've heard this many times before, but the Scream fan base too is very dedicated and detailed in their work of preserving all these details.
I don't know if there's any other franchise that has a fan base that cares to this degree. Like I can't think of one. Like they've been so kind and so supportive, but they like
nothing gets by them. So I was,
right.
I like, you know, my team a lot of the time would be like, oh, like, I think we can get by with this. And I would be like, if this costume ends up on some display in some city and a screen fan goes up to it and notices there is a seam here that is not, like, because we had to recreate the robes. And there's a lot of times in film, you know, you can make, like, for specific reasons, you sort of make adjustments to things so they function better, or, you know, you don't have enough fabric, so you can kind of tweak things in one way. And I, like, that was just like not an option.
Not on this project. So let's get into some of our favorite scenes and characters. I always love the opening scene, like most people. This features Samara Weaving, who you know very well, who you dressed in Ready or Not. She plays Laura Crane. I loved her look because it still felt very New York, but also you could tell that definitely you did your research and you understood the legacy of Scream, because to me, this felt very Tatum, Rose McGowan's character from the original Scream. So how did this scene come together?
Because I've worked with Brett before, the cinematographer, I knew, well, I didn't know how he was going to shoot it, but I had a sense of his sort of sensibility and how he would light it. And it to me also in the script read a bit noir, and I wanted her to very much be in silhouette and then also really pop. And so Scream is all about being self-referential, right? So I was like, is there a world in which we have a color that makes her pop? And that color I use a lot throughout the entire movie. I call it Tatum Line. Like Courtney Cox's shoes are kind of
right
color. And so I was like, well, this dress to me that I found was perfect because it was like Tatum Lime. It was also the same bodice silhouette as what Sam wore in Ready or Not. It really popped on camera for how Brett was going to light the scene. Like, I knew the lens choice and all that business. And then it also just, it felt very much like an opening look. And then she has silver shoes, which are like also kind of like a nod to the chrome ghost face. That was kind of how it came. And then she's wearing, like, I don't know if anyone would notice this, but she's wearing little like pearl drop earrings. And in Ready or Not, she wears pearl earrings. So it was just like a little.
What also is super cool, I love the sister duo of Sam and Tara. They are both badasses. And when it comes to their looks, they felt very within their personalities, but also to me, very functional in case, I don't know, maybe they get stabbed or murdered. Right? Yeah. So talk about their looks. I really love the jackets.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. It was really important to me. In a way, I almost approached Scream like you would taking over the second or third season of a TV show, in that like you already have these characters and these legacy characters that are established. And so it's like, I didn't want to reinvent the wheel of what Emily Gunshore had done last time, and they're established characters. So I want, you know, Sam's very utilitarian, Linda Hamilton kind of vibe. And so everything we sourced for her sort of had that undertone. And then Tara wore a lot of baby pink in the last one. And so I wanted to sort of carry that through. And Jenna really liked the baby pink and thought it felt very Tara. And, you know, something that I really consider a lot as a responsibility for myself as a costume designer is like how we portray women in certain roles. And Tara is this very, very strong character. And I find often you go to this very hardened look for someone who's a strong character. And I love the softness of Tara, of how she dresses. And it's like, it conveys the sort of complexity of women that you can be soft and tough. Like, it's not, I find often when you read certain scripts, it's like she was strong and she looked like, so I really liked how with Tara, she still felt kind of soft and vulnerable, but she's hard at the same time. So that was sort of what I wanted to carry through for Tara. And then Sam, the bomber, I have one that I got, you know, at the end of a random show that we never used. And it's all like disformed and kind of messed up. It's an alpha bomber. And it does this like curve in the back that's like really great. And so I brought it in, and one of the challenges of this was shooting for October and August in Montreal. And it gets really hot and muggy. So it's an alpha jacket that Sam wears, but we took all the lining out because they're so, like, they're warm. And then we recut it to kind of have a more interesting sort of backside in the same way that the bomber, the deformed bomber that I have has. So that's sort of how that came to be.
Right. I love the looks. They look like such badasses. And I agree with Tara too. It's like, it's very soft, but the way that's put together, the silhouette, you can still tell that she's ready to rock. And obviously it works out for her. We're allowed to talk about spoilers here, but she gets the job done.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, she doesn't hold back.
Chad and Mindy. How can you not love Chad and Mindy? Mindy is actually probably my favorite character, played by Jasmine Savoy Brown. I think she's brilliant. And you can learn so much about her character through her costumes. I love the strong femme lead shirt and a lavender menace shirt. And that jacket with all the patches and buttons on it. I mean, I could tell that you must have had a collaboration with Jasmine on these looks.
Yeah. Well, it was funny. You know, you always ask whoever you're working with, if you've worked with someone before, what the cast are like what do they like? What do they not like? And they're like, you know, Jasmine really has a clear vision of how she wants her, like how she likes Mindy to present. And there's a political aspect to Mindy's character that you saw in the last one. And so I just like really leaned into that. And so I talked to Jasmine pretty early on, and then I just like kind of ran with that sort of direction. The strong femme lead T, I designed the graphic for that. I designed most of the graphics on the clothes in this, which is like not usually normal, but.
Wow. That's pretty cool, actually.
Yeah. I just wanted it. I wanted full control. Chad is not that. Michelle, the production designer, her team did the Blackmore University, because obviously it carries through on other stuff, but strong femme lead, I looked at queer, like cinema, classic cinema with like queer undertones and their film titles, and then kind of looked at those fonts and kind of cobbled them together. And I had seen, like, when I started researching her character, I'd seen sort of these kind of really like cheesy feminist tease, like strong female lead. And I was like, Mindy would hate this, but maybe have her own like corrected version of like, it should be femme. That's where the inspiration for that.
That makes sense. It makes sense. I see it.
Yeah. And then Lavender Menace was in my research for Mindy. I started looking also at sort of the queer history of New York for her character, because, you know, in a lot of ways, New York City is a safe space for people from all over the world and all over the country to be who they are. It's not safe everywhere, but, you know, there's a community there that is unlike anywhere else. And so I started looking at the history of New York, and there was a sit-in in the 70s where a large group of lesbian women who felt like they weren't being included in the feminist movement. I forget the location of the sit-in, but they made all of these t-shirts that said Lavender Menace on them, and they hand dyed them and they hand stenciled them. So we did that exact thing, not on the same style of t-shirt, because I wanted the texture of like a waffle knit for hers, kind of, but we hand dyed them and we hand stenciled them, the exact same sort of technique. So yeah. And then all of her patches, some of them are from like eye stock that we like adjusted, but a lot of them I kind of came up with.
It's so cool. I love that look. I feel like we're going to see a lot of iterations of this look. I think the fans are really going to fall in love with all of Mindy's looks, actually.
I hope so. I had fun with Mindy.
Yeah. Well, let's change things up a little bit and talk about our favorite ghost face. Now, I know from prior research that creating the ghost face robe and mask is not as simple as just pulling it out of a bag or wardrobe that Scream hooked you up with. It's quite complicated. How did you make these New York ghost faces come to be? And we're not yet talking about the museum yet, just like our actual killer ghost faces.
We started with the robe, which the guys really loved what Emily did on the last one. And so they're like, we don't really want to change it too much. And we had the pattern. So she had done something really great with like how sort of large. I mean, you can see in one of the images that you have up here when he like pulls the knife in Gail's apartment.
So cool.
How domineering it is. And that was their whole thing, that they wanted Ghostface to feel as sort of intimidating and scary as possible. And that meaning taking up a lot of space. But I adjusted the hood a bit to make it a little bit bigger and fuller in the back. We kept the foam in the front. Like, we really tried to keep the integrity of Ghostface throughout. And then I changed the hem. It's a lot more sort of jagged and kind of inconsistent. And then I call them the wings, the technical ghost face or fringe, I guess. There's six total because the movie's six. And then I found when we were sourcing fabric for ghost face, Gregoire, one of my buyers, he found this like sheer fabric that had like a little bit of a sparkle on it. And it's kind of a knit. And it just really made me think of like bad Halloween costumes, but in a really good way. And so yeah. we camera tested it, and the guys really liked how, when layered with the hero fabric, it again took up more space and made it Ghostface is supposed to sort of feel as anonymous as possible, right? So the more space it takes up, the less easy it is to figure out who they are underneath.
Right.
So yeah, so that was sort of the robe process.
I love that. And also because Ghostface is essentially a ghost, right? So like the bigger it is, more, you know, I like the word wings actually, because I tie that in with ghost, but like the bigger that is, it does kind of give like a little bit of a floating aesthetic to it, which I think is really interesting.
Yeah. Oh, and the boots are Doc Martens, which Emily had used on the last one. And so I picked a slightly different, I picked a new pair to, because they haven't, if I remember correctly, and I could be wrong, there's never been the same type of boots, maybe in two. I have it written down somewhere. So if Newman is listening to this, don't come after me. But I wanted to change them because most films have had different boots. But we stay with Docs, and they were really generous and they sent me what I wanted.
I love the like routine aspect to Scream too, where we change things, but don't get crazy with it.
Yeah. You know?
When I saw the museum with all the legacy costumes and props, I wanted to stand up and start applauding, but I was in like a professional screening, so I was trying to keep it together.
Yeah.
Then I come to find out that a lot of the pieces I'm looking at inside this room actually had to be recreated by you and your team, which I just... I'm trying to wrap my brain around it. I mean, we're talking about the Ghostface robes, Stu's robe, Tatum's look, Steve's Letterman jacket, Nancy Loomis's suit, the Billy Loomis shirt with blood, which I'm sure never matches up the right way. So how did this happen?
That was scary. I had an assistant named Miriam who... her whole job was the museum clothes, and she worked really closely with Michelle and Michelle's team. This was another area where I was like, we can't get this wrong.
Mm-mm. This is scary.
Stu's robe. I was insufferable about it. Like, I was just annoying myself about it. what we ended up doing was, okay, first of all, I took a million screenshots and started tracing on my computer and my iPad, like from what I could tell what the pattern was. And then I have pictures somewhere, but I realized it was like the pattern was like three spirals that go in different directions. And then it's like woven together in a weird way, the pattern, but I figured it out. I know like the legit pattern, and I have a picture of it somewhere. And it's a brocade, but I was like, there's no way we can get a brocade woven in the amount of time we have. And I make quilts when I'm not.
Oh, how lovely.
I was like, I feel like if we take a poly satin to someone who quilts with like not the usual batting on the inside, but like layer it up, it will read as brocade on camera. And so we found someone who had many iterations of like spiral patterns. And so we had him test it on the fabric all these different ways. And it was very, very close. The only part that was off is there's these little sort of lines that connect, like, or I guess stripes, like three stripes that go in different directions. And so what we had him do is quilt it all in that pattern. And then my cutter, Peter, cut out all the pattern pieces from that. And then we had a stitcher go in and stitch every single stripe.
Jeez.
Yeah.
That's a lot of work.
My producer called me and was like, is this really necessary? I'm here for 55 hours to sew each stripe. And I was like, yes.
Yes.
It is very necessary.
Your name is on the IMDb. Yeah. People are going to find
also
you.
Also, Sue's robe, which also, by the from what I understand, it was a random grip owned it. It wasn't even a planned piece. So it's like not like anyone has the, like, I think it's vintage is really what I
right.
think it is. So yeah, so that was a whole thing. And then Miriam was really great in her research, and she found through a lot of like history of auction online what the original items were, like Emma Roberts' outfit. It's all the exact items we found on Poshmark and Etsy. Like the plaid shirt was actually a children's Abercrombie shirt.
Oh.
And she found that. And then Tatum's shirt, that was another thing where, I don't know, they must have had like 20 options. And I was just like, nope, not good enough. And what we ended up with is
Devil Wears Prada Scream Edition.
I know. I was thinking about it, but I was like, I'm like, the,
you had to, the, you had
the
to.
It had to be like bang on. And what we did was we found a sweater at a rental house. And we convinced them to let us buy it because it was the same texture, but it was beige. It was a beige men's sweater. We dyed it and then recut it to Tatum's shape. And then some, the skirt, someone does reproduction Tatum skirts that we bought online.
And is this all because you don't have access to original costumes? Like, they're not, for someone wondering, like, someone, you can't like, find them.
No, you can't. And someone's like auctioned them all off or something.
So there's someone at home right now probably wearing this Letterman like, jacket they're and they're like, well.
They're like, sorry, Avery. Yeah, so that was a whole thing. And yeah, Miriam was like incredible about it all. I have a video somewhere of, in my office. What I did was I set up a fake museum and I had the directors come in and look at everything and be like, add more blood, make it look crimier, make it look lighter, or, you know. Yeah.
That is so cool. I mean, I'm still blown away looking at it. I don't know if you know this, but I'm a huge costume breakdown fan. I'm just obsessed with how costumes are destroyed.
Yeah.
How they get all bloodied up.
Yeah.
The consistency of it. How, I'm sure this, you have a little bit of experience in this, you know, with your previous work, but Scream must have been like a whole different level.
Yeah, it was. I had Val, who is our like ager dyer, was just incredible. I mean, she did the mask, but she just does like incredible, beautiful work. And then Sabrine, who is my set key, who did all of the blood work on set, like even I of course saw the dailies, but when I watched the movie for the first time at the premiere, I was like, wow, Sabrine. Like, I was there for it all, and I like thought it looked good, but I was like very, very happy.
Yeah, Sabrine did the thing.
She did, yeah.
It's so cool, especially the scene where Mindy and all of our heroes get attacked, and we lose one of my favorite characters in that latter scene. I was just like, wow, so much blood, so much breakdown.
Oh, I know.
This is a dream.
That was a gross one, but like looked great.
Exactly. Hayden Panettiere is back. Let's talk about our legacy characters.
Yeah.
Kirby. I mean, I love Kirby. I will say she had me on edge for the majority of this film because I wasn't sure which way she was going to go by the end. But at the end of the day, I loved her badass Agent of Revenge costume. It's stylish, practical, also kind of edgy, a little goth. Is to me, is giving me a little bit like Resident Evil vibes, and I think that's amazing. Cool. Yeah. So what was your inspiration behind Kirby's look?
We wanted her to feel like we could think she might be Ghostface. So she has black boots.
Yeah. Yeah, you did it.
And so everything was essentially all black or dark. And Hayden, I felt like for Hayden and for Courtney Cox, like, they kind of know their characters better than anyone. And so I really leaned into sort of how they felt and what they would lean into. And Hayden really wanted to wear a Perfecto leather jacket for Kirby because, you know, she was like, Kirby's edgy and this and that. And so I found several versions of that kind of jacket, and we tried a bunch on, and we added shoulder pads to this to kind of, again, give her more presence.
I imagine she was super stoked to be back and just kind of recreate this character with you.
Well, and she, her and Tara both have Wes Craven's birthstone on them.
Oh, so wow.
Tara's like necklace that she wears it with the blue, like long sleeve kind of polo top. She's wearing a necklace that has peridot on it, which is his stone. And then Hayden is wearing earrings that have peridot in them as well. So, and she loved that because she just like, she was telling me such great stories about Wes and just like working with him. And it was really cool to hear, you know?
Right. That's such a cool detail. I'm obsessed with this. But one thing I'm obsessed with above all is the legacy of Gail Weathers' pantsuits. It is one of my favorite costume topics of conversation ever, and it always will be. So Courtney Cox, one of my favorite topics. In this film, we see Gail in a blue pantsuit with, as you mentioned, the Tatum lime green shoes. What is your idea behind this specific color? Why the blue pantsuit?
Well, so Christopher John Rogers made it custom for us, and they sent us a ton of swatches, and I looked at them with Courtney, and she was like, I've never worn this blue before in a pants. She was like, I feel like I've worn every other color. Let's do this. So it's very simple. It wasn't as, there's not as much of an interesting story behind it as right.
It's like we're running out of colors.
Yeah. Also, she has like the most insanely beautiful eyes that just like popped with this color.
Yeah.
Also, this color is everywhere this season. So I was like, this is great. Gail's so with it. I mean, she always is. It's very much a popular color this season, but yeah, that's sort of how it came to be.
I mean, it's true. The first moment you see her, she does really pop, and just like it's like such a different type of chills you get when you see Gail Weathers on the screen for the first time. It's very exciting. And am I wrong? Does she wear the purple pantsuit, or is it just the lighting? Is that a different pantsuit?
Yeah. Yeah. The when she goes to the museum, it's a,
okay. Right.
She's actually wearing jeans. Cause our sort of thing, our idea was when she shows up to, the apartment after a certain character dies and Tara and Sam are like, really, again, we wanted it to be like, oh, she looks like she's reporting. And then the lower half, she's actually off duty. That was sort of idea behind it. So she's wearing jeans. And she's wearing like flare jeans, which I like loved for Gail Weathers. and then the jacket is Victoria Beckham, and the kind of shell underneath is Dolce & Gabbana. And then she has this like bright orange bra on underneath.
That's brilliant. It's like business on top, party on bottom type of situation.
Gail whore, as I call it.
And then one thing that I was just blowing my mind because I knew this must have been such a process.
Yeah.
Whenever it's Halloween in a film, I usually get excited. And in this particular film, it's like everyone in New York City is just obsessed with horror icons and slashers and the most wildest, scary costumes. I mean, we're seeing characters from Us, Midsommar, which I love, Ready or Not, Michael Myers, Pennywise. How did this happen?
Well, it was scripted. And so there's two different subway trains. And so one is more like horror icons. And then one is more Ghostface centric. Mindy's is more Ghostface centric. And
poor Mindy.
I know. Poor Mindy. So we called it Sam's car, Mindy's car. And then I think they go, it's between 2 and 4 stops. And so I planned it basically, okay, dial it back. So start from the beginning. We, in the script, there were certain horror characters. So I was like, okay, I know I need XYZ. And then there was, you know, we have Ghostface. So I need this many Ghostface characters. And then it was, you know, Radio Silence really wanted to honor Wes. That's like their whole thing. in general. And so, and I felt the same way. It's like, we're doing horror icons. We obviously have to include Wes's legacy. And so it was,
of course,
what characters from what movies do we want? So we did our Wes list. And then it was just like, what's your favorite horror films? Like, what ones do you want to honor? Which, and also, like, you know, Kirby and Mindy talk about their favorite horror films. You know, there's Shaun of the Dead on Mindy's subway because they were talking about it, but Kirby watches Shaun of the Dead in 4. So that's like,
oh my gosh. Yeah. I didn't even see that one. I have to go back and how did I miss the Shaun of the Dead?
So that's why he's on Mindy's train. But what I tried to do is with, and I don't think you even clock in this sequence that there are subway stops. And there were a couple of times where the ADs were like, you are taking this, like, you're being too detail oriented with like the amount of people getting on and off. But I just felt like for the suspense of what Matt and Tyler wanted to convey, we needed to add more and more scary characters as the sequence went on. So I had spreadsheets upon spreadsheets, which I also had on Ready or Not. It's like a thing I do. It's how I like kind of control my right brain is spreadsheets. And then we made the spreadsheets into like Bristol boards, where we had like every single fitting photo of all of the extras we had done, kind of figured out as to where they would get on, when they would get off. You know, we would see, like, you actually see people who are on the subway, on the exterior of the subway scene, which, like, you know, that took coordinating. And yeah. And then I also, for Mindy's subway, I also wanted to have, when you first get on the subway, there's some characters on there that would make her feel like it is a safe space, like Angela Davis, Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And then it gets progressively worse and worse. Like, I have 3 handmaids on there that we like really distressed and broke down. Cause I was like, nothing would horrify Mindy more than like handmaids,
right,
amongst Ghostface. But like, so it was just like, it was, you know, creating that space and that tension with horror characters, but then also people that might feel safe to the characters. And then there's like Babadook on the Sam car, because Tara's on that car. And in the last one, she said that Babadook was one of her favorite movies. So there were lots of little Easter eggs like that.
That's so amazing. I mean, this is my favorite scene because, you know, as a costume nerd, I love to talk about storytelling through costume design. And I really think this is such like the epic scene because it feels so claustrophobic. You have all these horror characters closing in, but at the same time, you know, they're Halloween costumes and they represent the legacy of all these films and their favorite scary movies. And it's also a tribute to Wes at the same time and a tribute to you and your work on Ready or Not at the same time. So it's just like, yeah, this is the scene for me. It is so cool. And it just shows how powerful costume design and costume designers are in this industry.
I have to say, I had this moment when we were filming, this scene, during the prep of it, but it really hit me when we were filming it because so many people were coming up to my department being like, holy crap, like this looks crazy. And it was really special for me because I felt like I was honoring a lot of the designers who've come before me and like their legacy and their hard work. But it really kind of broke my heart in a way, thinking about the Costume Designers Guild Naked Without Us campaign. Because I was like, this is a prime example of why we need pay equity. Because this, if you took all of these iconic Halloween costumes out of here and erased the work that all of these people that have come before me have done, you would not have the same level of impact that you have in this scene.
Right.
So that was like an intense realization. But I love doing the scene, and it's one of my favorite pieces of work that I've done is this sequence. Like, I just had a blast doing it.
Right. It represents decades and decades of costume design and costume designers who have created these characters, and they wouldn't exist without costume designers. So
yeah, totally.
Yeah. I think everyone should study this scene. And Naked Without Us, hashtag Naked Without Us always. And finally, Avery, I just want to end with, Avery, you're now a part of this legacy that is Scream, perhaps one of the most loved horror franchises of all time. And the reviews couldn't be better. What did this experience mean to you?
It was very humbling in a way of, you know, being a part of something that means so much to so many people. And I feel like I've been really embraced by the fans and the community in a really lovely, wonderful way. So it's been great. And it's nice to be sort of a part of that family.
So right.
A bunch of very lovely, wonderful people who care deeply. And I understand, you know, it's a brilliant franchise.
And I'm just so excited to see what you do next. I'm sure you're walking through all sorts of doors right now that you probably can't share, but I know me and everyone listening is so excited to see what you do next, and I can't wait to talk again. Thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, it was so nice to like talk to you face to face and not just digitally.
Yeah, everyone listening, I literally was basically texting Avery during the movie. And I'm like, okay, I gotta go, but I'm gonna text you in an hour. Thank you, Avery.
The Art of Costume blogcast is hosted and produced by Elizabeth Joy Glass and Spencer Williams. Our audio engineering and editing is done by Dan White. Follow us on Instagram at The Art of Costume Pod, or visit theartofcostumeblogcast.com for all blogcast updates. If you want to support the show, go to theartofcostume.com/podstore. For more costume reviews, deep dives, and interviews, head over to theartofcostume.com, a blog dedicated to highlighting the best in costume design.